Les conférences du Collège de France.
Bonsoir à tous, c'est un très grand plaisir d'accueillir ce soir Emmanuel Pasguet, qui a été invité sur proposition de Denis Duboul et moi-même par l'Assemblée des professeurs pour faire une série de conférences qui vous sont indiquées ici. Pour Emmanuel, c'est un retour aux sources, puisque finalement, elle a fait sa thèse ici, avec Madame Tixier Vidal, sur la signalisation prolactine. S'est beaucoup intéressée ensuite à la signalisation AP1, ce qui lui a permis ensuite d'aller faire son premier postdoc chez Erwin Wagner à l'IMP de Vienne, et ensuite un deuxième postdoc chez Irv Weissman à Stanford. Elle a ensuite été recrutée par UCSF, où elle est restée 10 ans, et elle est passée maintenant à Columbia, où elle est depuis 2016 responsable du centre de biologie des cellules souches. Alors je disais en riant à Emmanuel que cette conférence était une véritable provocation. Je suis en France, un vendredi soir, à 5h30, veille de pont. Le risque, c'est que tu n'aies vraiment absolument personne. Et je suis très heureux de voir que l'école doctorale, visiblement, a été un excellent canal de diffusion et que vous êtes nombreux pour écouter Emmanuel qui va nous parler sur ce premier cours des principes de la biologie des cellules souches hématopoïétiques. You have the floor.
Merci Hugues. Et vraiment merci pour l'invitation et merci à tout le monde pour venir à cette première lecture. C'est vrai que quand on a discuté les dates à distance, on n'avait pas vraiment réalisé que la première lecture serait un vendredi soir, veille du pont du 11 novembre. Donc, merci pour être là. Hugues a déjà un petit peu introduit mon parcours, mais comme c'était vraiment un retour un peu aux sources de venir au Collège de France, puisque j'ai fait ma thèse ici entre 1991 et 95 plus exactement, donc c'était vraiment très émotionnel, surtout que mardi dernier, cette semaine, j'étais à Vienne pour les 40 ans de l'IMP, donc il y a eu quand même tout un effet de retour aux sources. Donc, la première lecture est à propos des principes de la fonction des cellules souches hématopoïétiques. Et là, je vais passer en anglais parce que je suis bien incapable de vous raconter tout ça en français, puisque j'ai fait, comme vous l'avez vu, les dernières 25 années de ma carrière scientifique aux États-Unis. So, when we start to talk about hematopoietic stem cell function, there is a few basic introductory concepts that I really want to come across today. And this first lecture is really to set the stage of the other lecture, which will deal much more into various activation and activity of the system. So when we think about stem cell, it's very much in the context of multicellularity and specialization of function within various organ system. Why? Because you need so many different differentiated cell type to ensure very specialized activity, but these cells usually cannot self-renew, cannot maintain themselves. So Mother Nature has developed a strategy which is developing this stem cell population in order to maintain tissue function, regenerate, replenish various cells within the different organs. And the stem cell came in many different flavor that are found across the early in development and during adulthood. They can be totipotent during development, or they become more restricted, pluripotent than multipotent. And in the context of hematopoietic stem cell, we are dealing with a multipotent stem cell, which is able to give rise to a large number of differentiated cells, but not every cell type that you find in an entire organism. That's very much the purview of a totipotent stem cell. And every stem cell shares the same fundamental principle, which is residing in a niche, and this crosstalk between niche and the stem cell population is very important for many aspects of their function, which are basically fitting in two main categories: self-renewal, maintaining themselves, and differentiating, commitment to various type of differentiated cell. All of these properties very important in tissue regeneration. And where various organs differ is very much in the rate of tissue regeneration potential and cellular turnover. So at this extreme, the blood system is one of the most regenerative tissue, where you have constant production of many different type of blood element by the hematopoietic stem cell in a very high turnover. It's much only in the gut epithelium and in the epidermis, and that really impose constraints of what the stem cell population is doing. On the other end of the spectrum, with very low cellular turnover and regenerative potential, you have organs such as the brain. When I was being educated, in the textbook, there were no stem cell in the brain. This is the latest discovered stem cell population, neurostem cell. And in the heart, where there is still controversy about is there really a stem cell, but most likely no. There is progenitor population, which have kind of stem-like activity during development, but no remaining stem cell activity allowing tissue regeneration during adulthood. So as you can see, stem cell biology is very much a biology of different cell population with fundamentally similar property, but very different output. So for hematopoiesis, the stem cell population is the hematopoietic stem cell, or HSC by abbreviation, which ensure lifelong production of all the blood cell, a lot of different lineage, more than 10 cell type, ensuring very different function for the body. Most importantly, transport of oxygen and CO2. Oxygenation of the body is absolutely critical for life. If you don't maintain your red blood cell lineage, you don't transport your oxygen, you basically die. If you don't eliminate CO2, it's not as toxic, but it's not good neither. Blood clotting is a second essential property of the blood system to ensure that you have coagulation happening when you have blood leakage and you don't bleed to death, meaning oxygenation and blood and clotting are the two like fundamental property essential for life of the blood system. And then you have the immune system, which is part of the blood lineage, which is a very innate and adaptive immune system, which is very important to fight every kind of infection and attack on the body, as well as really important role of macrophage in tissue remodeling and phagocytosis of dead cells, so basically cleaning up the body. So you can see very different function of blood cell and this absolutely need of constant production with quick turnover. And these are some of the number of the survival rate of red blood cell in human 120 day, neutrophil, the granulocytic lineage between half a day to 3 days, and the type of the amount of cell which are needed. So these are really what the blood system is geared to do and what hematopoietic stem cell must ensure constantly over the lifetime to make sure that we have always peak production of blood cell through our life. So the next part is a little bit of history, is how we came about to discover hematopoietic stem cell. And that picture of the atomic bomb in Nagasaki is very much the beginning of radiation biology, and where we realize that following this massive irradiation at the human population level, most people were dying from radiation-induced bone marrow failure very quickly, demonstrating that you could kill the ability to maintain the blood system. Then, through a series of landmark study with shielding of body part in the mice, an example is shown here, where it was shown that like you could do all body irradiation, but if we were able to shield the spleen of the mice, you could still maintain the blood system. So it was not a bone marrow failure inducing death. Then followed by experiment, a first type of transplantation in animal model, where following radiation exposure, all the animal die, but if you were able to infuse bone marrow cell, you have a very high likelihood of success in being able to survive this death induced by radiation. So really indicating that there was a cell which was capable of maintaining the entire blood system. And then came the search for what could be this hematopoietic stem cell and who could give rise to all these different types of blood elements. And it was not a given initially that it would have been one cell ensuring the production of all these different cell types, because their morphology and their functionality is so vastly different that the little lymphocyte and the massive megakaryocyte, which will shred in pieces to produce platelet, ensuring blood clotting, or the red blood cells, this erythrocyte, which are enucleated. So all of that are very, very different, the structure, biology, function. But a seminal experiment in the field performed in the 60s, Batil, Mike Kulok, and Siminovich, and these are really founding father of the early of the hematopoietic stem cell field. A lot of prize in the field are named after them because they were the first one to demonstrate that this cell population, this HSC, was physically existing. So, and that rely on the technological breakthrough of the time, which is the identification of chromosomal break that could be visually be seen on a metaphase spread. So where then you could trace cell which are produced by cell carrying this chromosomal break, you could isolate the cell later, the progeny, and see that they had the same chromosomal break. So very early day of much more modern lineage tracing experiments that we are doing in our days and age. So by marking donor bone marrow with this unique chromosomal break, then transplanting this cell into a latently irradiated recipient, looking 12 days later post injection of this bone marrow cell, the spleen of the animal shows these lobules, like these nodes, which appear like cancer, but they are not. They are just a hierarchy of intense proliferation, which are stained, and therefore they look very white and not very fairly nasty. But in fact, it's just like massive clone of myeloerythroid cell, which are proliferating, amplifying, and basically contributing to the regeneration of the blood system. And what they show is that this myeloerythroid colony were very much dependent on the number of bone marrow cells injected initially, and were all carrying this chromosomal break, indicating that myeloid cell and erythroid cell belonging to the same cell of origin. So I'm really simplifying the evolution of the field, but basically this concept of an hematopoietic stem cell, the mother of all blood cells, which then will differentiate and segregate the lymphoid lineage from the myeloid lineage, really was born from this type of experiment. Then, for many years, several converging technological development came to play. First, monoclonal antibody development. So we are now talking about the 17 and 18s, and a lot of work being done in trying to find antibody, develop tailor antibody to recognize specific cell surface protein and bound this antibody to fluorescence marker. Then flow cytometry. So again, another major technological development where you can apply electric field and stimulate this fluorochrome on this antibody and be able to physically isolate a cell population based on taking advantage of this ability to recognize surface marker and use this new fluorescence activated cell sorting or FACS approach. And finally, massive development in functional assay where you can read out the activity of this cell population either in a dish with various tissue culture media, addition of the proper cytokine and growth factor needed for allowing hematopoietic cells to survive ex vivo, as well as refinement in vivo assay and transplantation and the ability to discriminate donor cell from recipient cell with very specific surface marker. So with all of that, it was a race to identify the collection of surface marker which could decorate various population in the blood system. So here is an example in the mouse model, another example in the human system, but they are basically based on the exact same principle. You have a marker, you stain, you have a negative fraction, you can isolate, you have a positive fraction, you can isolate, and then you read out in cellular assay, either in vivo or in vitro, and you decide, okay, the activity I want, which is long-term engraftment following transplantation, reside in the negative fraction. That was for all the lineage markers. That's why the stem and early progenitor are all lineage negative. They do not express any marker of mature cell. And then you have other markers added to that, positive, negative, where is the activity in the positive fraction. So that's the c-Kit positive, the SCA1 positive, and so forth. So that's the approach, and I don't want to spend too much time because as a cartoonist has done in a meeting I was, it become hematopoetry, which is like I can wave a lot of poetry about flow cytometry. So where we are now is with a fairly, I will say, consensual identification scheme for early hematopoietic stem and progenitor, which are called HSPC as a bucket to indicate both the stem cell compartment, the compartment of multipotent progenitors, that's all this mouse full of MPPs, committed progenitor, and the one I want to focus is a granulocyte macrophage progenitor, or GMP, and finally, my mature cell, both lymphoid, myeloid, erythroid, and megakaryocyte. So the tree now is structured with a self-renewing stem cell compartment at the top, giving rise to this parallel population of multipotent progenitor, which is where lineage bias is starting to come to play and direct what's coming downstream in terms of the various lineage specification, with committed progenitor really serving as site of amplification of the lineage and producing this diversity of cell type which compose the blood system. And this is, as I say, this accepted now isolation scheme in the mouse model of hematopoietic stem cell, the various multipotent progenitor, which are in this LSK, stand for lineage negative, KIT positive, SCA positive, and myeloid progenitor in this LK, lineage negative, KIT positive, SCA negative gate, and in particular, this GMP cell, which produce granulocyte as well as monocyte and macrophage. Of course, things always change. So there is new population which are discovered not as quickly as in the 90s, I will say, or 2000, but there is addition of new surface marker and further separation of this population, as well as new subsetting of non-population based on activity. And you may have seen that if you try to enrich for a subset which are high mitochondria content, low mitochondria content, express more of a reporter for a certain transcription factor or another one. So this is still always an evolving field where there's new marker coming to play. So what define the hematopoietic stem cell? It's very much the fact that it's a population which is capable of being maintained quiescent. So quiescence, or G0, is this still relatively obscure phase of the cell cycle, because you take the textbook about cell cycle, and I was just, as I say, a few days ago in Vienna for my reunion with the IMP, where Kim Nesmith was there. And for Kim, every time I see him, I ask him, what do you think about quiescence? It's, quiescence doesn't exist, not part of the cell cycle. It's like, who cares? We care. We care humongously, because that's very much what maintains an hematopoietic stem cell, this ability to not engage any of the cell cycle driver, which will force entry into G1 and then progression to SG2M phase and cell division. And this is basically a repression of a lot of this regulator, as well as a very, very particular metabolic state where quiescent stem cells are very much not using their mitochondria. They are using anaerobic glycolysis. They take up glucose from the media. It's imported in the cell, is converted to pyruvate, to lactate. That generates a little bit of ATP. And there is a huge pressure on the enzyme which prevents entry of pyruvate into the mitochondria to not activate the electron transport chain and not activate a lot of these byproducts of mitochondria activity, which are associated with cell differentiation and cell activation. So, and that's really what makes a stem cell, an hematopoietic stem cell, a stem cell. What work we did a few years back, which really shows the importance of maintaining, of controlling this glycolytic activity of the cell, is when you activate basically. So you leave the quiescent state. You start now utilizing pyruvate to stimulate, to switch to oxidative phosphorylation. So the stem cell activates, there is epigenetic change because a lot of byproduct of mitochondria activity like alpha KG, acetyl CoA, and so forth are activator and coenzyme of a lot of epigenetic regulators. So you activate your mitochondria, it acts as a signaling hub. It changes the activity of epigenetic enzymes, so actually changing the chromatin landscape of the cell, and reactive oxygen species, which are as well byproduct of mitochondrial activity, act in some waveform and shape as signaling molecule as well to trigger differentiation. So when the cell activate like that, they do not engraft. They are not self-renewing anymore. They are focusing on different functionality, which is really generating progeny and producing the downstream mature cell, which are needed by the system. So, and to go back to this quiescent state, to reestablish the functionality which on which the stem cell rely to maintain itself, we show that autophagy, macroautophagy, the ability to take up this active mitochondria, engulf them into this double vesicle, membrane vesicle, fuse with the lysosome, was very important to allow the return to quiescence. If we block this ability to engage autophagy by using an autophagy deficient mutant, basically we run the system to the ground. We have overactivation of mitochondria oxphos, constant differentiation, exhaustion of the stem cell compartment, and basically very defective regenerative potential in this mutant. So, and that really shows that this hematopoietic stem cell, which are basically a massive nucleus, a shiver of cytoplasm, very limited organelle content. This is electron microscopy of sorted hematopoietic stem cell. Like, there is a massive importance of all these organelles function. We work on macroautophagy for removing active mitochondria and allow the cell to go back to quiescence. There is as well a lot of work in the field on mitophagy, removal of dysfunctional mitochondria, very important in cancer and during aging, evidence of chaperone-mediated autophagy as well to allow metabolic activation in the hematopoietic stem cell when you compromise glycolysis to be able to utilize lipid metabolism, as well as lysosomal function. If you compromise your lysosome, you degrade the functionality of the stem cell and the ability to maintain quiescence. And more now an interest in vesicular trafficking coming out of this cell. So I talk a lot about transplantation as being the identifying criteria of hematopoietic stem cell. So it's true. It's clinically what is the most important. is this ability of the hematopoietic stem cell to be transplanted into the circulation, to engraft in the niche, and to produce in a manner sustained all the blood cells which are required by the organism, therefore reconstituting, rebuilding the blood system. But in terms of what we are dealing with and mechanistically speaking, this is an extremely complicated process because the stem cells which are releasing the circulation. Stem cells can go in circulation. It's part of their life cycle. They actually leave the bone marrow cavity on a fairly regular basis. They are not static, locked into a niche. They are able to move around. They leave the marrow, they enter the blood circulation, they roam around, they can enter tissue. If they sniff around some infection and inflammation, they may locally differentiate into various type of mature blood cell. If there is nothing that could drive them to differentiate, they will leave the tissue, go to the lymphatic system, go back to the marrow, to the circulation, and re-engraft another bone elsewhere. And that's why bone marrow transplantation works, because we take hematopoietic stem cell, we put them in the circulation, and he will find his back, his niche. So, and that's basically entering the very small capillary and the sinusoidal blood vessel in the marrow stroma, identifying some adhesion molecule, usually a patch of SDF1 alpha, CXCL12, which will lack for leukocyte retention, which will lock in the hematopoietic cell. They will stop rolling and circulating. Then the cell will extravagate, meaning change its shape to either insert itself between two endothelial cells, which line the blood vessel, or sometimes it literally drill a hole into an endothelial cell and just cross over by just like pushing the membrane and inserting itself into the stroma. Then in the marrow stroma, the cell need to sense chemokine factor, which will tell them, hey, your niche is here, where it will migrate towards. It will kind of lodge on the population of cells which are welcoming it, and their response to signal ensuring regeneration, meaning able to activate and start produce downstream progeny to rebuild the blood system, and finally go back to quiescence, reestablish this glycolytic metabolism, stop activating, and go back into a resting phase. So it's an enormous number of cell activity that you ask the cell to do, which is why you can see and read a lot of papers which tell you inactivation of gene X, Y, Z process right and left will compromise hematopoietic self-renewal because it will impact on one or the other of this process and lead to the fact that at the end of this long journey, we measure a reduced production of blood cells in the circulation. So this is the functional definition of an hematopoietic stem cell, but it covers a lot of different cell activity. So continuing on the complex journey that the stem cell need to do, stem cells are born during development very early on. So when you look at around before day 7.5 and around this time point in the mouse, you don't have hematopoietic stem cell. You have production of blood cell, but they are very much ensured by progenitor, which really give rise to essentially a red blood cell and macrophage for tissue modeling. Stem cells are born around day 10.5, 11 by basically transformation of endothelial cell into hematopoietic cluster through this cell intermediate, which he call an endogenic hemangioblast, hemangenic endothelial cell, sorry. And this little cluster of hematopoietic cell, which are debudding out of this endothelial layer, are then being shed by the circulation in the blood vessel. And these cells start their journey. They are born in the AGM, aorta gonad nephros. They end in the fetal liver. They end in the placenta as well, which is not shown on this picture, but they are in the placenta as well. They expand in this different place. And finally, towards the late stage of fetal development, they leave the fetal liver, they colonize the fetal bone, which are as well a developing structure, which is not this empty cavity as we have in adults. It's a lot of chondrocyte then, but then there is shaping of the chondrocyte by fetal macrophage and preparation of the bone marrow cavity, which is where hematopoietic stem cells reside in the adult. And there is very changing developmental priority between fetal development and adulthood. During fetal development, the system and hematopoietic stem cells are extremely proliferative. They are running on all cylinders with a lot of oxidative phosphorylation. They have very active stress response mechanism to eliminate every damaged cell. Because what you want is to build a pristine pool of hematopoietic stem cells, which will then play a role during the life of the organism. So you amplify your population, you keep the best one, and they basically contribute very little to blood production, which is really the fetal, what we call primitive hematopoiesis, the fetal progenitor, which provide blood during fetal development. In young adulthood, still change. That's when now you have to work with the stem cells that you have. And you have to work at peak performance. That's when you establish quiescent, which I spend a lot of time talking about. But the cell is really capable to actively respond to challenge and insult and to really undergo rapid differentiation in response to signal, and inflammation are very much the word that the organism use to tell the hematopoietic stem cell what to do, when to differentiate, when to produce the cell which are needed. And then everything changes again during old age, and that will be a topic of my last lecture, where now you have the unintended consequence of peak efficiency performance during young adulthood, which now play havoc with the system, and the niche change, and everything is now having to be considered differently. But that's for the last lecture. So, downstream of the stem cell, you have the multipotent progenitor compartment, which is very, very much a game of commitment. And you have a collection of cells, and this is where there is the most discovery happening still in, as of now, in different populations. For example, what I have called stem cells so far can be segregated between a long-term stem cell and what is called MPP1, which is a subset a little bit more activated than the deeply quiescent long-term stem cell. And the short-term stem cell, which is downstream of the long-term stem cell, is now can be separated between MPP5 and MPP6. You can start to see the confusion of the nomenclature with this 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 is not in order. And it's boring, but that's how it is. Plus MPP2, which is shown here in orange. MPP2 is a very much erythroid megakaryocytic biased multipotent progenitor. It produces mostly this mixed colony here in methyl cellulose, is shown here in this spleen colony-forming unit, and produce very little B cell. Then MPP3 is a myeloid bias multipotent progenitor, a lot of GM granulocyte microphage colony, still very limited B cell potential. And MPP4 is a lymphoid bias multipotent progenitor, produce a lot of B cell. These are all the characterization in cell assay ex vivo, but you can see exactly the same response in vivo when you transplant this population. Again, here HSC, short-term HSC, engraft very well, produce a lot of platelet, a lot of nucleated cell, a lot of myeloid cell with fairly sustained production. Why it's declining here is because lymphoid cell start ramping up, so it's an invert trajectory to get to 100%, but I am only showing you the myeloid output. And that's typical transplantation experiment. You label your donor population. In this case, we took them from a GFP reporter line. You transplant, in this case, 200 cell in 2,000 cell for each of these population in sublethally irradiated recipient. We bleed at various time point and we trace the output of the system. So that's the stem cell compartment, extremely efficient, lifelong. You can serially retransplant, it will be maintained. Multipotent progenitor, not so much. It engraft kind of transiently. MPP2, as I say, produce a lot of platelet bias towards the megakaryocytic erythroid lineage. MPP3, MPP4, absolutely very low engraftment. But when you look at the myeloid output, much more sustained. So these are these myeloid biased multipotent progenitor, MPP2, MPP3. And MPP4, very short myeloid output. Counterpart is very strong lymphoid output coming. And when we did this work, we were still in the era of microarray. So that's the result we were getting at this time. But basically, this multipotent progenitor show already the molecular signature of their commitment, in contrast to stem cell, which have very limited commitment to one or the other lineage. Multipotent progenitor already shows a molecular commitment, the cellular activity associated with commitment. They are multipotent in the sense that they can be redirected away from what is their default commitment and be able to produce other lineage. But intrinsically, they are already specializing toward a certain lineage. So blood homeostasy for MPP2, phagocytosis, myeloid differentiation for MPP3, lymphoid differentiation and immune response for MPP4. Then finally, going to the committed progenitor, so the famous granulocyte macrophage progenitor. So it's a very abundant progenitor population. You can see it in this imaging study where we label GMP in purple with a collection of marker. So I hope you see with the resolution of the projector. So green is mature cell. A lot of green mature cell in the bone marrow, especially this massive megakaryocyte, beautiful cell. You see them very well. HSC and MPPs are in yellow in this HSPC gate. You basically do not see them. They are so rare. CMP and common myeloid progenitor and megakaryocyte erythroid progenitor, so progenitor for the rest of the myeloid lineage are as well abundant. They are shown in red. And here you have some very nice purple cell, which are this granulocyte macrophage progenitor. No particular distribution everywhere in the marrow cavity and everywhere to ensure peak production of cell. And you can see in this movie, which I hope will be running, where in the group of Tim Schroeder in Switzerland, they basically sorted one stem cell, put it on a stroma layer, which kind of mimic the bone marrow microenvironment, and just let it go with cytokine pushing myeloid differentiation. And you can see this massive outburst of granulocyte than one stem cell can do. So that's the regenerative potential of the tip of the hierarchy of the stem cell. And here is what one granulocyte macrophage progenitor can do. So the stem cell movie is 7 days shortened in a few seconds. This movie is 5 days. And that's what a GMP does. So it's definitely not the same caliber than an hematopoietic stem cell, but there is a lot of them. And in this condition, basically, the GMP are pushed toward monocytic differentiation, and the green marker is reflecting their commitment to become a macrophage. So that's the amplification we are talking about at this level of differentiation on this committed progenitor. So Of course, the next revolution has happened. We are living in the era of single cell, everything. So, and it's very important as well for the blood system and hematopoietic stem cell function. So, which is all we now understand, lineage commitment with in this first example of single cell RNA-seq, which was published by the group of Bertie Godgen in the UK. So, when you mature, you have this very clear trajectory of lineage commitment. But the HSPC are in this little blob here at the top, which are very difficult to separate. And he raised the key question of commitment and the difference between cell fate and cell state. Because everything which was done since Till and McCulloch, a demonstration of the existence of an hematopoietic stem cell has led to identification of a defined population and this like very clear separation of fate at this junction between myeloid, lymphoid, between erythroid, granulocytic, and so forth. So stepwise differentiation by stable population. But everything which is now coming from all the single cell RNA-seq analysis shows that this fate is much more flexible, that you don't have metastable population which can be sorted by flow cytometry. You have continuum of differentiation of fate with transcriptional lineage priming taking place and driving the production of this downstream lineage. So how do we reconcile these two models? And that's really a question of which is acute at the moment, and something that we recently took a peek at it with a fantastic computational scientist at Columbia University, Dr. Raul Rabadan, and member of his team. So using a lot of machine learning computational principle and the biological part done by James Wan, a postdoctoral fellow in my lab, which took advantage of the vast array of single cell RNA-seq data that we had accumulated in the lab to address two of the major technical challenges which are everybody is being confronted with when they try to understand a result from single cell RNA-seq analysis. It's how to annotate the same cell type consistently and with high resolution across sample, especially when you are comparing a steady state with a perturbation or a normal with a malignant context, and how to reconstruct the topology of normal hematopoietic differentiation and quantify the disruption which are affecting the system. So what we did was to create an annotation program which we call EMISCRAB. So where we can bring single cell RNA-seq dataset, use first a broad classifier which is based on bulk RNA-seq reference which are available everywhere. And this is very good to identify the mature cell type. So no problem here, leaving this famous HSPC. So when we sort cell for single cell RNA-seq 10x genomic on this LK-LSK gate, so taking broadly all the HSPC, this broad classifier really perform extremely poorly, like it don't identify the cell population. So what we did was to take our knowledge of defined cell population, where we have a wealth of cell biological readout associated with this population, then sort 10 of them, we are extending that now to additional subset, label them with oligo hash, mix them together, and then sequence them again by single cell RNA-seq to really link FACS-defined HSPC population with molecular profiling in this single cell RNA-seq assay. So this is what we call this fine classifier, which is based on this oligo-hash single cell RNA-seq reference. So now we take this poorly annotated LSK, LK cell population, and we can really identify the various population and consistently, reliably, repetitively re-identify the same population. Here at the top is a very small HSC compartment, followed by the short-term stem cell, followed by the MPP4, and CLP for lymphoid differentiation, the MPP3 for both Fc gamma receptor positive and negative. I make a point about that. Next slide, which are giving rise to the GMP, which is different subset, functional subset, which compose the GMP and produce granulocyte and monocyte, the MPP2, the megakaryocytic progenitor, the erythroid progenitor, basically all the lineage. So when we perform correspondence annotation between the oligo-ASH population and the predicted cell type that we found in the single-cell RNA-seq, both ours and other validation dataset, the correspondence is fairly good between all these different populations, except for two populations, which is now shown in a different representation here with this recall probability. And the two populations where the recall is poor is Fc gamma receptor positive MPP3 and MPP2. And these are actually the two populations, MPP2 and MPP3, where we have identified functionally bypass mechanism. Like where we can see that this Fc gamma receptor MPP3 bridge HSC directly to GMP and is used to really enhance myeloid cell production on demand. And I will tell you more about that in the third lecture on emergency myelopoiesis. And same thing, a lot of groups now have shown this megakaryocytic bypass mechanism really going from stem cell to megakaryocyte production without going through MPP2, pre-MEGI, and megakaryocyte progenitor. So these are the bypass mechanisms that can be detected by this less constrained, fixed molecular identity of the subset. So we can use the IMAScript program to re-net published dataset. This is an example from Dan Lando lab where you see what most people do when they don't know how to identify a subset. You have HSC 1, 2, 3, MKP 1, 2, 3, immature myeloid progenitor 1, 2. So they give number because they don't know how to label them. So when we use EMAScript, we can basically separate all of that and show that actually only HSC1 in the Dan Lando dataset contain HSC and short-term stem cell versus HSC2 and 3 are mostly all the multipotent progenitor and some committed progenitor, and same thing for the immature myeloid progenitor subset. We add a little addition to our program to be able to basically use it on datasets which are not pure hematopoietic cell. When in tabula muris, you have a lot of tissue, like lung and liver, which have an hematopoietic component, but as well non-hematopoietic component. So we added a filtering score, which is based on 17 genes only, to be able to really enrich for what is hematopoietic cell, and then use the broad and fine classifier to really consistently identify stem and progenitor. So I'm speeding up. So the second problem, the second main question besides the identification, consistent identification of cell type, is to really understand the topological structure of the hematopoietic system. So here, people in Raoul's lab use both density path mapping, which look at the point of high density in gene expression, coupled with PAGA connectivity, which is a way to measure the probability of transitioning from one state to another one, to really bring that together and to create this new model of node of hematopoietic topology. So the first thing to say is that it doesn't look that different from what I show you based on cell activity. It's still a stem cell at the top, then multipotent progenitor compartment, and then the differentiation along the various lineage. But it doesn't correspond to one single population. And I think that was really the big surprise coming out from this analysis, is that you have metastable state, which corresponds to this node and this and this valley are transitioning from nodes to nodes. But each node contains several type of population. It's more enriched for stem cell at the top, more enriched for a multipotent progenitor and committed progenitor here, but it's not a single population. And when we run many iterations and do random walk analysis, we can see that this node model perfectly match with very recent lineage tracing barcoding approach, which have been done by CRISPR-Cas, Scratchpad, and other type of barcoding approach. This model recaptures the main transcription factor, which have been associated by many investigators in the field with a transition from HSC long-term stem cell to short-term stem cell, from short-term stem cell to multipotent progenitor, or more associated with lymphoid, MEG-E, or myeloid commitment. So it reflects what has been known a lot in the field about the role of this transcription factor in driving this fate transition from one stage to another. But the advantage of having a model based on populations that can be sorted by flow cytometry isolated is that we can add to this model a lot of cellular readout, in particular measure of apoptosis at various stage of differentiation, which are this cell death rate, measure of cell cycle, which we can use this Fuji-2 reporter mice and be able to really trace G0, G1, SG2M, and the ratio of these various proliferation activity in these different population, and use that to make a cell cycle calibration score, which is basically matching what can be measured by single-cell RNA-seq with SG0, SG2M measurement. And then use more sophisticated program like Palamir to measure entropy, which assess the rate of differentiation. And in this Palantir plot, the cell which has the most entropy are the hematopoietic stem cell, indicating they are the less committed. And in this Palantir terminal state, which show the most commitment to a various lineage, this perfectly mirror where we identify by flow cytometry the various different granulocyte progenitor population, megakaryocytes, and so forth. So the paper is on bioarchive. So if you're interested by all the bioinformatics behind, it's described there, hopefully clearly enough. The only thing I want to finish showing you is this more simplified version of this node tree, topological tree, especially for the downstream downstream population, and showing what I already told you, the two node in stem cell compartment, the four node in the multipotent progenitor compartment, and then in the megaerythroid, myeloid, and lymphoid lineage. And some of the readouts, the proliferation rate, very low at the top of the hierarchy, increase with differentiation. And basically the differentiation rate, which is an agglomerate of various measures, which really correlate with what we know about the transition from one node to another associated with commitment to the different lineage of blood cell. So all of this information are available into GitHub repository. So EMAScript for cell type identification, EMAscape for this topological model, and EMAScope for really like interactive exploration of population. And I think this will be very useful tool for the community to really move forward, integrating isolation of cell with what their molecular landscape is telling us. But the conclusion of this work is that there is a great agreement between cell type defined by flow cytometry and identification on the molecular space with EMAScript, but very imperfect correspondence with density cluster, which we found in our node model with EMAScape, which are mostly mixed group of population. And that really support what has been emerging recently from various work, which is that many discrete HSPC population defined by flow cytometry and surface marker do not represent single cell population, but an agglomerate of cell with mixed lineage potential and differentiation stage. Yes, there is heterogeneity, But it's important to be able to identify them. So it's these two opposite things that really we are trying to reconcile now. And that demonstrates, what we demonstrate is that consistent annotation of this HSPC really is a powerful method to resolve this heterogeneity and to combine molecular data with cellular investigation in the same topological structure. And I will stop there. A little thanks to my lab, especially James, which did this work with a lot of collaborators. That's my lab. I'm recruiting new postdoctoral fellow for everybody, anybody interested to come to the US, I know. And that's it for today, and I'll see you soon.
Collège de France, le savoir en illimité. Retrouvez tous nos contenus audio et vidéo sur notre site collège-de-france.fr, les plateformes de podcast et nos chaînes YouTube.